Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, and all of it is brought to you by Dollar Shave Club. Right now, for only $5, you can get the Dollar Shave Club handle, the blades, and a starter set for some of their other great products. All you have to do is head to dollarshaveclub.com/martini, dollarshaveclub.com/martini. So, Jim, let's dive right into our good martini today in what we think is a tongue-in-cheek op-ed piece from Brett Stevens, columnist over at the New York Times. Most folks remember him for many years over at the Wall Street Journal, but I'm going to quote directly from your top item in the morning jolt today. New York Times columnist Brett Stevens, allegedly one of the right-of-center voices on the newspaper's editorial page, is going to get a tsunami of grief for today's column, which is not too subtly titled, Repeal the Second Amendment. And if you take all of his arguments at face value, Stevens demonstrates an infuriatingly snobby contempt for his fellow citizens. Gun enthusiasts fantasizing that Red Dawn is the fate that soon awaits us and gets basic facts wrong. He declares from a personal safety standpoint, more guns means less safety, ignoring the fact that crime rates have steadily declined as gun ownership has increased. But then we come to this section. Quote, in fact, the more closely one looks at what passes for common sense gun laws, the more feckless they appear. Americans who claim to be outraged by gun crimes should want to do something more than tinker at the margins of a legal regime that most of the developed world rightly considers nuts. They should want to change it fundamentally and permanently. There is only one way to do this. Repeal the Second Amendment. And Jim, you say right after that you think this is a big-time bear trap for liberals and Democrats, but if their logic is consistent, this is probably what they would really be calling for. And as we mentioned yesterday, the New Republic actually is calling for this now. So I guess we'll see if the Democrats put up or shut up.
I say this is a good martini. This is a good development in our discussion about firearms and gun rights and what to do about gun violence. One of two schools of thought, either Brett Stevens really is now a really thoroughly effective deep cover agent, that his effort is to kind of steer the liberals and Democrats as far off course as possible, and that he is telling them what they want to hear, and he is making them believe that this is a not only a winnable fight, but the right thing to do, and that by golly, it's time to start calling for repealing 10% of the Bill of Rights. In the Morning Jolt, I lay out why your listeners can probably imagine right now being a Republican candidate running against a Democratic candidate who wants to repeal the Second Amendment, and all the easygoing attack ads, Mr. Jefferson, Washington, and Adams would like a word with you, Democrat John Smith thinks you have too many rights. If he's willing to take away this one, what other rights does he want to take away? And you can picture the grainy, slow motion, black and white footage and stuff like that. This is a phenomenally unpopular viewpoint for good reasons. And the argument of Republicans against Democrats has for a long time has been these guys just want ever expanding power of the state. They don't really believe in the Constitution. They don't really believe in any limits on their power. They just want to micromanage every little decision you make. And sometimes, like, the former Congressman Phil Hare, they come out and say explicitly, I don't care about the Constitution. They violate their oath. They basically believe this is an old, tired document that belongs in the National Archives, and we should occasionally glance at it. But because it's a living, breathing document, they can take away your rights the moment they find them inconvenient. Unsurprisingly, not only do many gun owners and many NRA members and Republicans would never have to worry about getting out the vote in a circumstance in which Democrats were calling for repealing the Second Amendment. The other thing is also, like, we may recall during the presidential debates last year, Greg, Hillary Clinton insisting that the Heller case was mostly about keeping guns out of the hands of toddlers.
Yes.
I mean, the word child did not appear in the court decision. The word toddler did not appear. The Heller case was about the District of Columbia basically banning handguns. You could be the most law-abiding citizen in the whole wide world. You could be a woman afraid of a stalker. It did not matter. You did not have a right to own a handgun under D.C. law. The justices looked at that, and by an unnervingly close 5-4 decision, they said, no, that's not – you cannot say that that law is consistent with the Second Amendment. And the if Hillary Clinton were more honest, she would say, she occasionally she said that it was wrongly decided. But basically, Hillary Clinton believed that you do not have a right to own a firearm, that really it's the government has that right. You don't. It's on an ideal world, we would take your guns away from you. Now, the interesting thing is Democrats keep insisting nobody wants to take your guns away from you. And then they say, we just need something like Australia's gun confiscation plan. Nobody wants to take your gun away from you. We just want something like the old pre-Heller DC where you were not allowed to own one. Look, that is taking away people's guns. So I'm sure there are a lot of Republicans who saw that and said, ah, Bret Stephens, how dare he? Look, either he's, like I said, either he's doing this all as a nefarious plot to drive Democrats further into the woods or into the wilderness, or he really believes it. But either way, I think it's good for the right that the Democrats are being more honest about what they want. And it is, at least according to the most recent numbers, about 20% of the public believes that only the police should be allowed to own a handgun.
Wow. Well, the Democrats are more honest about wanting single payer, too. Hopefully that's not actually where we're headed on either one of these issues. But, Jim, it's been interesting, the different tactics being used by gun control advocates for several years now. I don't know if Obama started this, but he certainly made it pretty prominent in the debate. Common sense gun reforms, gun regulations, common sense gun control, taking guns out of the hands of dangerous people. That's the whole plan. Now you're just a bad person in the minds of some if you own a gun. David Frum, who pretends he's a Republican, was a speechwriter for George W. Bush. He was on MSNBC, and they were talking about different regulations in terms of what's legal in the gun world, and here's where he went instead.
There is something very wrong with the American gun culture. 3% of the people own 50% of the weapons in this country. I mean, a tiny number of people and vast numbers of weapons. Until you persuade people that it is just dangerous to themselves, their children. You're not a good parent if you have a gun in your house. You're not protecting your family. You're a bad parent if you have a gun in the house. Until you drill that idea into people's heads and persuade them to change the way we change about cigarettes and seatbelts, these technical fixes aren't going to accomplish a lot.
This is why Democrats can never have full power, Jim, because they just decide what's best for us. And if you have a gun, you're a bad parent.
Any other parenting tips, David? How about bedtimes? Get them to eat their vegetables. Doing homework. Any other useful tips? Thanks, pal. Yeah. I mean, look. How could anyone possibly think about? I realize David Frum is theoretically right of center. He definitely has been a rebellious conservative for a long time. Made his share of foes. He and I have always generally gotten along. Even though I'd say one out of every 3 days, I think he's onto something. And the other 2 days, I think he's on something. The fact that he basically feels like he can judge, millions of Americans as bad parents because they have a gun in their house and choose to have a gun in their house for their own personal protection. Look, it's easy to do this when you live the life, take that perspective when you live the life of David Frum. But David Frum doesn't work the midnight shift at 7-Eleven. David Frum doesn't work run a liquor store in a bad neighborhood, right? David Frum, thankfully, doesn't have to walk to the car home alone in a dark alley or through a parking lot in the middle of the night and be afraid of being attacked. What's fascinating about the advocates of most gun control people is that deep down, if you really pick away at it, it's like, I don't need a gun. Why would anyone else need one? Well, because they live different lives than you do. So anyway, this is my good martini and puts me in a good mood.
Good chaser. I meant to mention this at the top, but we talked about yesterday how Tim Murphy, the supposedly pro-life congressman who urged his mistress to get an abortion, even though it turns out she wasn't actually pregnant. He is not going to run for re-election. I think both of us would probably like to just see him leave now, but at least he will not be on the ballot in 2018, and I'm guessing he'll go away fairly quietly. At least we hope so.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't want to see him take his congressional career to term. The other aspect is, Tim Murphy's gone. For those of us who are not fans of Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy, one Murphy down, one to go.
And we got rid of Patrick Murphy in Florida last year. So
there you go.
In the Rubio Senate race. So, all right, let's move on to the bad martini, Jim. And during much of yesterday's news cycle, particularly on CNN, but other places as well, the big question was whether Secretary of State Rex Tillerson earlier this year had referred to President Trump as a moron, and whether Vice President Pence actually came to the rescue and convinced him not to resign as Secretary of State. Tillerson yesterday said he never considered leaving his post. He wouldn't directly answer the question of whether he had ever referred to Trump as a moron, although Heather Nauert, the State Department spokesman, later in the day said that had never happened. So a lot of folks thinking that might be the end of this little chapter, but apparently it's not. This is from Melissa Quinn over at the Washington Examiner. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, Defense Secretary Jim Mattis, and Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin reportedly have forged a suicide pact in which all three members of President Trump's cabinet would leave if one of them becomes a target of the president. News of the agreement surfaced amid renewed questions about Tillerson's future in the administration. A lot of the rest of the article goes into the previous backstory that I just mentioned about Tillerson's frustrations reportedly with Trump. What do you make of the Blood Brothers suicide pact here, that these top three cabinet officials, if one goes, they all go?
Yay. I think highly of Secretary Mattis. I think highly of John Kelly, and I think highly... I think Tillerson is trying his best. I think he is very much hamstrung by a lack of support from the White House, a lack of deputies in the State Department. As an outsider to the world of diplomacy and I think really to politics and to Washington, he came to that position without a lot of allies, and I think that is holding him back. People I know at the State Department have said, who are not really big fans of the pick, have said, look, this is a smart guy. He's got a steep learning curve, but he's trying hard. Having said all that, it's not surprising. We've been hearing about reports of friction between Tillerson and Trump really for quite a few months now. Trump was mocking him on Twitter at his negotiation attempts with North Korea this weekend, which is kind of unusual. You'd figure if the president had a problem with his own Secretary of State. I mean, Greg, I was asking this, does the Secretary of State not have a phone or something? usually you'd pick up the phone and say, look, Rex, here's my problem with what you're doing. You wouldn't take to Twitter to do it and berate him, kind of like he did with Jeff Sessions, kind of like he did with Tom Price. You know, these kind of public humiliations of the people you picked for these jobs doesn't work. I don't think it's the most effective way of dealing with differences in your administration. So on the one hand, it is good that these three guys all like each other, all respect each other, and basically believe that they will not let the president do something rash or irrational or dangerous or something like that, that they will present a united front and say, Mr. President, this is not necessarily a good idea. I think the problem is that, you know, particularly lighting yesterday's press conference, Tillerson's pretty exasperated. Look, I know he said he's never thought about resigning and all that kind of stuff, but look, there's enough indicators that, you know, anybody would be exasperated if their boss was berating them on Twitter and mocking them and stuff like that. At some point, I will be, and people can play this back, it is October 5th, 2017, I will be genuinely surprised if Rex Tillerson is still Secretary of State on October 5th, 2018. There's been a lot of rumors going around town that he's just sticking around for a year. He realizes he doesn't have the trust of the president. He realizes he's, not going to be able to do anything. He realizes the diplomatic corps doesn't like him. You figure at some point he'll just get exasperated. He won't want to leave too early. And, oh, by the way, we're still looking for a Secretary of Homeland Security. We're still looking for a Secretary of Health and Human Services. But at the most convenient time, Tillerson will depart. I assume this means that, Kelly and Mattis would still stick around. The idea of seeing all three of them depart at one time, I think, would genuinely be a crisis of government, particularly if we still have those two other openings in the cabinet. So I think the president really needs to start changing the way he treats his staff. And look, there's nothing wrong with having disagreements. There's nothing wrong with saying, look, you're pursuing policy X and I want policy Y. That's, you are the president. You just got to do it behind closed doors and stop openly demonstrating your contempt for the people who volunteered to work for you and who are supposed to be on your own team. So we'll see whether this shakes out, Greg. But the fact that they even needed to talk about the idea of a so-called, quote unquote, suicide pact is not reassuring.
No, but it hopefully will retain some stability at the upper echelons of the administration. And it does send a message to the president, because these guys, well, obviously public service is an honor. These guys gave up quite a bit to do this. Steve Mnuchin, of course, is an Oscar-winning movie producer, among many other things in his career. Rex Tillerson was head honcho over at Exxon, and James Mattis had one of the most distinguished military careers we've seen in the past few decades. So definitely top-notch people. Whether or not they're exactly in the right positions, we'll see as time goes forward. Mnuchin will, of course, play a big role on tax reform and as you mentioned, Tillerson, a little bit new to the world of diplomacy, but good to know that he's making the effort, and hopefully things can smooth out a little bit over there. And Jim, if Tillerson, Mattis, and Mnuchin are going to spend this much time close to each other as they try to protect each other's jobs, they might as well experience good personal hygiene. And that's where Dollar Shave Club comes in, because by now everyone knows that Dollar Shave Club ships amazing razors for just a few bucks. We've been members for a while, and to put it mildly, we love the shave we get. What you might not know, though, and I didn't until this latest round of offers from Dollar Shave Club came around, is the Dollar Shave Club has products for pretty much everything else you'd ever need in the bathroom. Body wash, shampoo, hair gel, lip balm, whatever you need, they've got it. So as soon as you know about Dollar Shave Club's quality razors and the shave butter and so forth, knowing all about this other stuff, you're going to be sold too.
You know, most men have gone to the store and just seen just the endless options, and deep down, we can't tell the difference between any of them. So if you happen to find a clerk, and you've heard me lament the death of service in this country and how hard it is to find a clerk, the clerk usually doesn't know the difference either or can't really help you. They're not experts on the products. Well, Dollar Shave Club makes it easy and convenient for you to upgrade your shave and your bathroom. You no longer have to step foot in a store to get a high-quality shave and grooming products. They will deliver them right to your door. And just like their razors, everything is super high quality and left me looking and feeling amazing. From premium ingredients to sophisticated scents, Dollar Shave Club is changing the game.
So if you're like us and you're just sick of the nonsense at the store, and believe me, it is nonsense. I've talked about that in the past couple weeks as well. Now is the time to try out Dollar Shave Club, because for a limited time, Dollar Shave Club is basically giving away their starter set to new members. For only $5, this starter set features their executive razor and three trial-sized versions of their most popular products that help you stay fresh and clean. In your first box, you will receive the shave butter, Dr. Carver's shave butter. We've talked about that a lot. Body wash, and yes, the One Wipe Charlie's Butt Wipes. You will also receive their executive razor, which includes their premium weighty handle and the full cassette of cartridges. After that first box, replacement cartridges are sent for just a few bucks a month. This offer is exclusively available at dollarshaveclub.com/martini. That's dollarshaveclub.com/martini. Dollar Shave Club's high-quality products will have you covered from your face cheeks to those other cheeks, and there's no better time to try the club. dollarshaveclub.com/martini. All right, Jim, on to the crazy martini now. And if someone had told me that 8 months into the Trump administration, we'd be getting more bizarre statements and more inflammatory statements from Michelle Obama than Barack Obama at this point, I probably would have taken that bet, and then I would have lost badly. It was, I think, just last week, or certainly recently, where Michelle Obama told an audience that she thought women who voted against Hillary Clinton, and especially those who voted for Trump, in 2016 voted against their voice and essentially liked who they were told to like. How demeaning is that? Well, she's not done. She was at another public event, and she was talking about the, I guess, racial breakdown in Congress and why that means nothing gets done. What she's describing here is the view onto the House floor leading up to the State of the Union address.
On one side of the room, it's literally gray and white. Literally, that's the color palette on one side of the room. On the other side of the room, there's yellows and blues and whites and greens. Physically, there's a difference in color, in the tone.
Wow.
Because one side, all men. All white. On the other side, some women, some people of color. And whenever I was sitting, I would always have a guest in that booth. Mm-hmm. And I was always the most embarrassed at the beginning when people would see that. Because I'd say that, is it just me? Am I looking at how governance works? And people look down at that and go, yeah, yeah, that looks good. That looks right. We're probably getting a lot done. And we're doing it right. You know? I look at that and I go, no wonder. No wonder we struggle. No wonder people don't trust politics. It's not, we're not even noticing what these rooms look like.
Oh, Jim, the First Lady of the United States is embarrassed to be there at the State of the Union address. Give me a break.
I was going to say, when she's going through that litany there, Greg, who are the blues? And then the yellows, please tell me she's not using that as a characterization of African-Americans. Greens, is that, you know, like Is that a reference to party or just clothing color? Or
I don't know.
So, there's that. So if you happen to check, yeah, there are 22 women members of the House of Representatives from the Republican Party. You may have remembered that a good portion of the final months of the Republican presidential primary revolved around the fight between Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, two Cuban Americans. But we don't apparently she wasn't looking that hard. Senator Tim Scott, Congresswoman Mia Love, Will Hurd, all African-American Republicans. But I guess she just didn't look that hard. Are there more Democrats on that side? Sure. But, does that automatically represent a racist party? Why would you not say, well, wait, are Democrats systematically opposed to white male members or something like that? It's, it is rather infuriating and frustrating. I suppose, again, it's good that Democrats are calling for repealing the Second Amendment. I suppose I should feel good that the former First Lady is saying that, Congress has too many white people, too many white men, and we really need more blues, greens, and yellows, whichever group, space aliens, maybe? I'm trying to think about which alien races had different colored hues and stuff like that, but I'll just leave it there and just say that a pretty infuriating statement from the former First Lady.
True. Well, the blue ones are clearly from that James Cameron movie, Avatar, right?
That's right. Yeah, Pandora. And I'm sure the green-skinned race from Star Trek. And I'm trying to think about what alien race was like a bright yellow. But I'm sure at some point in Star Trek they had a bright yellow species.
The minions? Are there minions on the house floor?
There we go, yes. And in fact, minions are dramatically unrepresented in I'm sure at some point, there is some guy who will say the Minion American community is underrepresented in our legislature. That's my crew, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, man. It's so fascinating. It's not like Congress gets as much done as we'd probably like it to in a lot of different ways. But to discuss its accomplishments based on the identity and the demographics of its makeup rather than what they actually do, it's been said so many times, but this is another perfect example of it. The best thing Trump has going for him is his enemies.
I think that's an accurate statement. If the race had come down to Bernie Sanders or Carly Fiorina, how do you think I'm voting in that one? Bernie Sanders or Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio? Right? Bernie Sanders versus Tim Scott. How do you think I shake out on that one? This idea that you can tell what kind of a person you are based by the color of your skin or your gender is pretty infuriating, but that's where we are in 2017.
Keep doing it, Dems. Keep doing it. All right, Jim, we'll stop there for today. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please visit the good folks over at Dollar Shave Club and get their great starter kit. Only $5. DollarShaveClub.com/martini. And tune in again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.